thank you, Rob. And it's a pleasure to once again be here. Today I want to discuss a subject that really helps capture a lot of my experiences in this yeshiva and also intersects a number of things that we're working on currently. This week's parsha, of course, is Parshas Tetzaveh, which contains the description of the Big Day Kahuna, and we're going to be focusing on that particular subject and the seeming transition from the construction of the Mishkan and the instructions of how to build the vessels of the Mishkan to the commandments regarding the Kohanim. We're also going to intersect with a sugya in Gittin, which the yeshiva is learning this year, and which adds quite a bit to our discussion of the role of the Kohanim, the orientation of the Kohanim to their particular role, and also, to bring it all for a full circle, the origins of this shiur, where this shiur germinated, was in my study many years ago, almost 10 years ago, in the Kollel Elyon here, when I was a Kubietzki Kachim Fellow, and we spent a good deal of time studying the Seches Zvachim. And so the shiur this morning is really a product of learning that took place on this particular campus, which I am quite appreciative of. Let's start with source number one, which there'll be a little bit of everything today. Hopefully a little bit of halacha lamasa, a little bit of lumdus, a little bit of critical reading of, or careful reading of Tanakh. Hopefully everyone will have a piece that they enjoy, and certainly if you are a Kohen, this shiur will be of interest to you, and if you aspire to religious leadership, I believe it'll be of interest to you. The Mordechai, which is a halacha compendium in the back of each of the Masechta. The Mordechai was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yechiel Mipariz. He lived in the end of the 13th century. His work is basically a compendium of Ashkenazic psak, arranged according to the order of Shas. And in a comment, in a Haggah, in a note on the sugya about how one is supposed to treat a Kohen, the Mordechai relates a story that took place years prior, which is will serve as a launching pad for our discussion this morning. Ma'ase b'kohen sheyatzak mayim al yidei Rabbeinu Tam. There's a story about a Kohen, perhaps a student of Rabbeinu Tam, who was one of the great Tosafists. And this student happened to be a Kohen, and he was being mishamish his rav by pouring water on Rabbeinu Tam, washing his hands and feet, perhaps. It's not exactly clear. V'hiksha lo Talmud, and a student asked Rabbeinu Tam, Hashaninu v'Yerushalmi ha-mishtamish v'kuhuna ma'al. Said, Rebbe, how can you derive benefit from this Kohen performing this service on your behalf? Doesn't this violate what we learned in the Yerushalmi, which we'll see in just a moment, that someone who makes use and partakes of the kahuna, they violate a transgression, a mi'ila. It's a betrayal which involves desanctifying or betraying the sanctity of an object or of a person. Shtamish b'kuhuna ma. The heshiv lo, Ein bahem kedusha bizman hazeh. Rabbeinu Tam responded, "Nah, this isn't an issue. Kohanim don't have kedusha nowadays. Dekaim alon, because we learn, we'll see this gemara in Svachim in source number 4. Bigdeim alehem kedusha alehem. Bilala. When the Kohen wears his begadim, then he has kedusha. Bizman shebigdeim alehem kedushasim alehem. But when the Kohen is not wearing his Big Day Kahuna, when he's not wearing the vestments, then he doesn't have Kedusha. So I did nothing wrong." V'hiksha, and the student retorted, "Im kain, kol mine Kedusha lo le'avid lahu." If that's the case, without Big Day Kahuna, Kohanim don't have any Kedusha, why do they get the first Aliyah? Why do we say Birshus HaKohanim? Why do we give them preference, kedimus, when it comes to a number of things? Why do we treat them in this elevated fashion? The Shasik Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam didn't respond. Unclear, did he not respond because he felt the answer was obvious or because he had been stumped? Either way, another scholar, a later scholar, Veheshiv Harav Rabbeinu Peter, another one of the later Bali Tosos, said, Dinihi diyesh bahem kedusha yachol limcho. Cohen has kedusha, but certainly in this case where Rabbeinu Tam is being serviced by this Kohen, he certainly was the Kohen was certainly mochel for his Rebbe, for a great scholar such as Rabbeinu Tam, and therefore there is no problem with it. This is an important halachic issue. The Ramah actually codifies this, the halacha, it's in parentheses right below source number one, Asur lishamish b'kohen afilu b'zman hazeh, tahavi kimo behekdish im lo mochel al kach. The Ramah takes Rabbeinu Peter's answer and basically formulates the halacha that if the Kohen is willing to forego the Kedusha, then one is permitted to make use of a Kohen. But even Bizman Hazeh, we consider it akin to being Moel Behekdish. So there, the halachic issues we'll leave for another time, but it certainly is an important halacha to be aware of. And hopefully, Kohanim nowadays are mochel. You can probably presume that that's the case in most instances. But what really is fascinating is this give and take and this back and forth about Bizman Shebikdeim Aleihem Kedushasim Aleihem. What does that mean? What does that mean? When a Kohen is walking around in the street, do they not possess any special status? What happens to the Kohen when he wears Bigdei Kahuna? Does he go from being the equivalent of a Yisrael or a Zar in the Gemara's terms to a Kohen? Do the clothes transform the Kohen? Do the clothes make the Kohen a Kohen? Or is there some way that we can pinpoint the distinction between a Kohen without the Bigdei Kahuna and the Kohen with the Bigdei Kahuna, just in terms of how we experience Kohanim in our everyday lives? We do give Kohanim the first Aliyah, we do reference them, there may be other halachos of Kedimus. That's not at all connected with Bigdeim Aleihem. There's no Kohanim walking around with Bigdei Kahuna today. So what I want to try to do in the next 45 minutes is really explore the issue of Bigdei Kahuna, what the purpose of the Bigdei Kahuna was and is, and how we can understand the role of the Kohen outside the Mikdash, or post Churban Beis HaMikdash, and what his role is in terms of the Avodah inside the Beis HaMikdash. And if we can appreciate that and understand that, we'll be able to extract some important lessons. There are people who, when they go through Parshios to Truma and Tzitzava and Ayakel and Pekudei, there's some groaning that ensues. But I think if you understand these issues and explore them in depth, they're rich, and they really provide us some guidance and some perspectives on timeless values, even aside from the specifics of whether or not they're applicable nowadays. This halacha happens to be applicable, and therefore it concerns us to try to figure out exactly what is the status of a Kohen, both inside and outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, let's just take a step back for a moment and look at some of the Talmudic sources which discuss the status of a Kohen and the function of the Kohen and the role of the Bigdei Kahuna. Take a look at source number two. This is the Yerushalmi and Brachos, which form the basis of the give and take in the Mordechai that we just read. Abba Bar Chana, the Rav Chuna, Haben Yasvin Achlin. Abba Bar Bar Chana and Rav Chuna were sitting and eating. V'haba Rav Ze'era Ka'im U'mishamesh Kumehen. And Rav Ze'era was being mishamish, and he was serving as the waiter. Allah v'ta'in tarvayhu bechada yade. He brought them some wine and some other food, but Reb Ze'era brought it all in one hand. Amar le Abba Bar Chana. Abba Bar Chana, who was being served by Reb Ze'era, said, Ma yade chavirta kita'in? Something happened to your other hand? You know, why are you serving in such a strange fashion? If you have two jars, you might as well, instead of corralling them in one hand, hold them with two hands. V'kasi lavei avuye. Aber Barchana's father, who I guess was Barchana, was upset at him for asking this question. Amar lei, and he said to him, Lo misitcha dat revia v'hu ka'im mishamish. You're an ingrate. He's serving you, and you're complaining about the way in which he serves you. It's not like he delayed or tarried. It's not like you waited for your food for an hour. He just brought it to you in a unconventional fashion. Va'od, and furthermore, dehu kohen, v'amar Shmuel hamishtamish b'kuhuna ma'a at mekelei. This is an important phrase, and also, as is often in Yerushalmi, it's somewhat ambiguous. In addition to you being an ingrate, you're also utilizing, being mishtamesh, a kohen, and you're treating him lightly. At mekil le. So what's interesting is, there's an important, if you read this very carefully, it seems like he's not necessarily. Why didn't he start with this? Why did he only get upset? Why did Bar Chana only get upset at his son once the son complained about the service? He didn't say to him right off the bat, "You shouldn't be using Reb Zeira. He's a kohen. Don't allow him to be your waiter." Mishtamish b'kuhuna ma. Seems like only once Abba Bar Chana opened up his mouth and expressed his displeasure or his wonderment at the serving protocols of Reb Zeira, that it's then that that Bar Chana, Abba Bar Bar Chana's father said, "You're not acting correctly, and by the way, this is a Kohen, and you're treating him lightly." Yes, sir.
But until that point, he could say, just doing him a favor. Once Abba Bar Bar Chana speaks to him in that, I'll say, condescending tone,
right,
to make clear that he's, in effect, a servant, and that's when his father says, "Excuse me, you're off."
Right. Okay. So it could be that his role was somewhat ambiguous. He could have just been bringing him something over, and it wasn't necessarily service until he treated him like a servant, like the help. But I think that's one possibility. The other possibility is that what Bar Chana is saying is that even if the shimush v'kuna Ma'al consideration is not really fully in effect, maybe post Beis Hamikdash, without Big Day Kuhuna. Nevertheless, to treat someone who is a Kohen and who could potentially serve in the Beis Hamikdash in that kind of fashion, in that mekilei, you're dismissive of him, you're treating him so poorly. That's his question. Because if we read on. You read on, Gzeira dehu rabba va'at kaim umishamesh tachtai. Okay, the Gemara then asks, Minayin hamishamesh bekuna ma'al, Rav Acha b'shem Shmuel, Amar, v'amru lahan atem kodesh lahashem, v'hakelim kodesh, ma kelim hamishamesh behen ma'al, af hamishamesh bekohanim ma'al. We're going to come back to this. The source for the Isser Mi'ila, for the consideration of utilizing a Kohen as Mi'ila, comes from this verse in Ezra, which serves as a basis for a comparison between the vessels in the Mikdash, the Kelim in the Mikdash, and the Kohen. We're going to come back to that parallel in a few moments. So, the Yerushalmi and Brachos serves for us certainly as a source for the fact that one shouldn't mistreat anyone, but certainly one shouldn't mistreat a Kohen. That seems to be Bar Chana's statement, and may serve as a source for an across-the-board prohibition, unless the Kohen foregoes his honor or his status of Kedusha. Okay, let's expand this discussion a bit, and then we'll contract it even further. The Mordechai, as we said before, is commenting on the Gemara in Gittin, source number 3. The fifth parak of Gittin enumerates a number of things that are done mipnei darkei shalom, and one of those things, according to the Mishnah in Gittin, is the order and the procedure for calling various people up for aliyas. Elu dvarim amru bnei darkei shalom, kohen kore rishon v'acharav levi v'acharav yisrael bnei darkei shalom. The Gemara in Gittin then explains that this idea of giving kohen preference comes from a more general requirement of v'kidashto. If you look in the underlined section, Rechia bar Abba Amar Mehacha v'kidashto l'chol davar shebekdusha. Tani debei Rabbi Shmuel v'kidashto l'chol davar shebekdusha liftoach rishon ulevarich rishon v'lito mana yafe rishon. So according to the Gemara in Gittin, and this may be separate from an iser hishtamshus, there seems to be a general, and part of the challenge in the Mordechai is that these issues get conflated in that Mordechai. The obligation to give preference and to sanctify the Kohen by showing deference to the Kohen, giving him the first aliyah, giving him the opportunity to lead benching, giving him the opportunity to take the finest or first piece of meat, all those things are under the rubric of the kidashto. The question is whether this Isser Hishtamshus is an offshoot of the kidashto, or something more specific, a prohibition which is a separate din, and we'll come back to that as well. Okay, so up until this point, we've surveyed some of the background on the status of a kohen outside the Beis HaMikdash, Bizman Hazeh. We've discussed briefly the Kidashto, and we've also noted that there seems to be some kind of Isser Hishtamshus B'Kahuna based, according to the Rishalmi and Brachos, on a comparison and a connection between the Kalim in the Mikdash and the Kohanim themselves. Okay, now let's take a look specifically at Big Day Kahuna and what they do. Okay, now this may be part of a larger topic, especially midrashically, the role of the Big Day Kahuna and the role of clothing in general in Judaism, going all the way back to Adam and Chava. We're not going to be able to discuss all of that or any of that today. What we're going to focus on is the question of what do the Big Day Kahuna do? And really, are the Big Day Kahuna essentially a requirement for the Kohen to perform the Avodah, but the Kohenim are what would be called in halachic terms a din in the Avodah, a requirement, a prerequisite for the Kohen to perform his Avodah? Or alternatively, do we see the Big Day Kahuna as transforming of the Kohen himself, changing the Kohen, transforming his identity in some kind of way, and thereby enabling the Kohen to now do the Avodah. So let's take a look at the Mishnah, the Gemara Zvachim, source number 4, and we'll be on our way. The Mishnah in the beginning of the second paragraph of Zvachim enumerates all of the various people who are not permitted to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Perform the avodos, more specifically. Kol ha-zvachim shekiblu daman, any of the zvachim, right, shchita is ksher v'zar, so that's why we start with the avodah of Kabbalah. Any of the sacrifices whose blood is received by a zar, by a non-kohen, by an oneg, someone who's awaiting the burial of a karov, of a close relative. Tful yom, mechusar kippurim, those are two people who have had part of the process of tahara, they've undergone part of the process, but it hasn't gone to its completion. Umechusar begadim, and mechusar begadim shelo rachatz yadayim raglaim, or if the kohen didn't wash his hands and feet. Arel, an uncircumcised kohen, tame yoshev, omed al gabe kelim al gabe heim al gabe raglav, etc. Pasa. Kibel b'smol pasul Rav Shimon Machshir. This is my focus about whether or not if someone's righty and they receive and catch the blood with their left hand, whether that works. Be that as it may, the Gemara there discusses mechusar begadim, that's what we're going to focus on. Gemara in source number 4 says, Minola, Amar Rabbi Avua, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Umatabah, Shmeid Rabbi Lazar, Reb Shimon, Damar Kra, V'chagartim osam avnet, Aaron uvana, V'chavashta lahem mikvaos, V'yisa lahem kuna l'chukas olam. Bizman shebigdehem alehem, kuhnasam alehem. Ein bigdehem alehem, ein kuhnasam alehem. Okay, so the Gemara there gives us a key line, a line which we saw earlier on Rabbeinu Tam cited, and which we really have to try to understand. The reason why a Kohen who is not wearing the Big Day Kahuna can't perform the sacrificial service is because, it would seem according to this opinion, he's not really a Kohen. Without the Big Day Kahuna, Bizman Shbig Deim Aleihem, Kihunasim Aleihem. Ein Big Deim Aleihem, Ein Kihunasim Aleihem. That was what Rabbeinu Tam cited as a justification for what he did. And that's what we have to try to understand. Is it really true that a Kohen is a Zar? If he's really a Kohen without Big Day Kahuna, if he's really considered the equivalent of a Zar, why do we have two separate enumerations? We have Zar, Onin, etc., Mechusar B'Gadim. What's the difference? They're exactly the same. So if you read on the Gemara has further deliberation about what exactly is the source for Mechusar B'Gadim being Pasal, disqualified from working in the basement. Someone who's drunk. Shim Avad Chilo, Tamalomer, Yayin B'Shechar Al Tesh. Lahavdil Vein HaKodesh Vein HaChol. Mechusar B'Gadim Mishlo Richlut Yadayim Raglayim Yinayin. Tamalomer Chuka. Chuka, Chuka L'Gzera Shava. So there's an alternative source that we can use. Make a Gzera Shava from Shesu Yayin to Mechusar B'Gadim. Where it says, Imi hasam hava amina hani mili avoda de zar chayva la amisa, aval avoda de ein zar chayva la amisa, emalo kamash vola. So if you utilize the chuka chuka gzera shava, you're not bound by the statement, bizman shvigdem alayim kunas alayim. And that may be part of the discussion here as well. So we may have two different sources, the chuka chuka gzera shava, and the pasuk of the Chagartim Aso Avneit Vayeselahem Kunas Lechukas Olam. Those two sources may project two different approaches to the Big Day Kahuna. Either the Big Day Kahuna are just a requirement for the Kohen to do the Avoda, or without the Big Day Kahuna, the Kohen is not really a Kohen. Those two perspectives emerge from the Gemara in Zvacha. Question is, if you really take the view seriously that Bizman Shebigdeim Aleihem Ein Kunasim Aleihem, what then is the difference between Mechusar B'Gadim and Azar? So that question is taken up, if you look at source number 5, in the discussion between Rabbeinu Avram ben Rambam and Rabbi Daniel Habavli. There's a sefer called Ma'asa Nisim. I think you can find it separately, but in the old Rambams, in the back of the Sefer HaMitzvot section, and now in the Rambam Frankel edition on Sefer Mitzos, they've placed all of them alongside the discussions, kind of re-edited them to go alongside each discussion according to each one of the mitzvos. But there were a series of questions that were asked by Rabbi Daniel Habavli to the son of the Rambam, Rabbeinu Avram ben Rambam, about the Rambam's enumeration of mitzvos, about the Sharashim and about specific mitzvos. And there is a back and forth that they have with Rabbi Daniel Habavli saying, I don't understand, how can you count this as no mitzvah? How can you not count this mitzvah? How can you not count this as multiple mitzvahs? No, he asks, why aren't the Arba Minim four mitzvahs? If you think that Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh are two mitzvahs, why aren't the Arba Minim four mitzvahs? It's a lot of those kinds of questions. And he asks this question here as well. If Mechusar B'Gadim means Ein Kuhnasim Aleihem, they're not a Kohen, then what's the difference? Why count separately Mechusar B'Gadim and Zar? And here's Rabbeinu Avram Ben Aramam's response. It's also cryptic. V'yadua shemechusar b'gadim af al pi shemadregaso madregas hazar b'midas ma mikomakom eno zar mamish. Very quantitative. Even though Rabbeinu Avram Ben Aramam says the status and level of the Mechusar B'Gadim is somewhat akin to that of a Zar, you're not a Zar Mamish. V'lachem lo sagi lan b'meshe maninu es hazar. Therefore, the Rambam didn't find it sufficient to just count the Zar. He needed to also count Mechusar B'Gadim. And then he goes on further and explains, V'yi afshar limnosam yachad. And one could not have counted these two prohibitions together. The prohibition of mechusar begadim to do avoda, and the prohibition of a zahar, gam mishum ha-hevdel ha-atzmi shebinam, because of the essential difference between them, v'gam mishum shezeh mitzvah sase v'zeh mitzvah lo sase v'lo yitachein seiruf ha-maniyah v'hatzivu. There's another more technical problem that Rabbeinu Avraham ben Aram points out, and that is that the way mechusar begadim is formulated is as a lav haba michlal esei. It's a prohibition that's derived from a positive commandment. You have to wear the big day kahuna in order to do the avoda. If you don't wear the big day kahuna when you do the avoda, you violate that asei. And therefore, since it's formulating the asei, that's different than a zar, where it's a prohibition. A zar cannot perform the avoda, and that's another reason, a secondary reason it would seem, why the Rambam couldn't count them as one. So according to what we've got from Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam, is a concession that it's not exactly a zar, but we don't really have any real, I would say, qualitative distinction, any lamdusha chiluk between Kohen outside the Beis HaMikdash without his Big Day Kahuna and Kohen with his Big Day Kahuna. Is he more of a Kohen, less of a Kohen? Yes. Of course not. No, he can't be Tamei Mace. He can eat Truma even if he's not wearing it. Correct. You can just add that to the list. So what does it mean he's similar somewhat b'mida, he's madrigaso madriga zar b'midas mami komokum eno zar mamish. Someone else had a suggestion or question? Correct. Correct. Tumas Meis, Isser Grusha, all of that applies Bizman Hazeh. Rabbeinu Tam wouldn't argue on that. So even Rabbeinu Tam had to have some distinction between Kohen and the outside the Mikdash, Kohen in the Mikdash, with the Begadim. We're going to get to it. Okay. Take a look at source number 6. This is already a little bit more helpful in terms of, you know, one could just say quantitatively, you're 75% a Kohen. And therefore, all those dinim apply, but the last 25% requires the big day kahuna. I'd rather come up with something that strikes us as, you know, being more conceptual, more logical than just a quantitative amount. If you take a look at source number 6, this is the Shitu Mikubetzes, the compendium of comments by the Rishonim on the Gemara and Zvachim that we saw a moment ago, and he has the following potential distinction. I think this is already going to get the ball rolling. Then we'll take a look at Parshas Tetzaveh, which will really help us, I believe, understand what happens to the Kohen and the purpose and function of the Big Day Kahuna. Ihavik siv b'nei Aharon v'lo ha-Kohanim hava amina d'lo kapid kroy a-Kohanim b'kihuno v'hada amar hacha hava lehu zarim hava amina hani mili b'makom shekasuv Kohen. The mashma shehikbid beku kihu. Ah, so Shitum Gatzah says this whole discussion in the Gemara in Zvachim, this mancha b'deim aleim ain kunasim aleim. There really are two different terms, and if we could add maybe two different categories or two different concepts that are at work. There's the familial genealogical status of Bnei Aharon. And then there's the din of Kohen b'kihuna. And when we reference Bizman Shebigdeim Aleihem Ein Kuhnasim Aleihem, and they're like a zar, what we mean is that without the Big Day Kahuna, the Kohen is lacking his kihuno status. He still retains his status of Bnei Aharon. So therefore, all the prohibitions that go back to the link, the genealogical link, the yichus, all the way back to Aharon, those would pertain to everyone, even without every Kohen, even without their Big Day Kahuna. The Big Day Kahuna makes the Kohen b'kihuna. And that's already giving us a helpful step. But there are times in the Torah and in Gemara and everywhere where you can't say the person's just a Ben Aharon. We don't call, you know, we don't say Ben Aharon, we say HaKohen. So we have to try to fine-tune this distinction somewhere. And here's where I think having an understanding of the context of Parshas Tetzaveh really helps us out. Yes?
There's a case where clearly the big day kahuna does elevate the kohen, a kohen into a kohen gadol.
Okay, good. Okay, so the point was made about going from kohen hedget to kohen gadol. That's an excellent area. The truth is, the chakira I mentioned earlier about whether the big day kahuna are a din in the avoda or a din that transforms the kohen may be a distinction that you can make between kohen hedyot, you know, the regular begadim, and the kohen gadol. And we're going to the idea I'm going to suggest in just a moment, I think, really applies to the kohen gadol, but it may even apply to the regular kohanim as well, and just not as pristine or intense a fashion. If you take a look at Parshas Tetzaveh as a whole, and I tried to give you most of the Parsha in source number 7 to give you some context, we often think of Parshas Truma about being about the Kalim of the Mikdash, and Parshas Tetzaveh about the, you know, the commandment to make Aharon and his family the Kohanim, a description of the Big Day Kahuna, and then the initiation process of the Kohanim and of the vessels of the Mikdash. But if you widen the telescope a little bit further, you'll notice that the truth is, this whole discussion of the Kohanim, the Big Day Kahuna, and the initiation of the Big Day Kahuna, and the sanctification of the Big Day and of the Kohanim, is really within a larger context of the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. The beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh talks about Ner Tamid, and the very end of Parshas Tetzaveh has the discussion of the Mizbeach HaZahav. It's not as if we finished talking about the Kalim and the Beis HaMikdash, and we now moved on to talk about the Kohanim. The Kohanim are placed, the discussion of the Kohanim and the Big Day Kahuna is inserted as an interruption, seemingly, between a description of most of the Kalim Beis HaMikdash, the Aron, the Shulchan, the Menorah, etc., Mizbeach HaNechoshes, and what we find at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh, a discussion of Mizbeach HaZahav. So one first has to think, one could also ask the question, why is Mizbeach HaZahav tagged on at the end? But what I think the two Parshios together, taken together, proves is that the Big Day Kahuna and the Kohanim themselves are Kalim in the Mikdash. That one has to view the Kohanim like one would view the Kalim in the Mikdash. And that the way the Kohanim are described and the role of the Big Day Kahuna is to transform the Kohanim from people who are, let's say, Gavra Kohanim, you know, sons of Aaron, yes, but more than that, they're Kohanim. And when they put on the Big Day Kahuna, or when the Big Day Kahuna are placed on them, which is probably more accurate, they are transformed into Klei Mikdash. Hilchos Klei Mikdash v'ha'ov dimbo. We'll see in a moment is how the Rambam describes the halachos of the vessels of the Mikdash and of the Kohen. And if you look at the Psukim carefully, source number 7, the entire way in which Aaron and his sons are treated and the Begadim are described, they're just objects. They're completely objectified. V'ata hakrev alecha es Aharon achicha v'es banav ito. Bring Aaron hakrev, like sacrifices. Mitoch b'nei Yisrael l'chan oli. V'asisa b'gdei kodesh l'aron achicha l'chavod l'sifaras. The way the begadim are described is the same way that the vessels are described. And then in Perek Chav Tes, about halfway down, v'zeh ha'davar asher ta'aseh lahem l'kadesh osam l'chahein li. You take Aharon and his sons and you sanctify them with the oil and the blood that is used to sanctify the other vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. And they are dressed, they're completely objectified via the Big Day Kahuna and the initiation process. And what I think the Torah is trying to convey, and what Bizman Shebigdeim Aleihem Kuhnasim Aleihem, the idea here is that there are two dimensions to the role of the Kohen, and the two aspects to the Kohen's identity. One aspect of the Kohen's identity is as an individual who is a Kohen, who's supposed to teach. You know, the Kohenim didn't just do the Avodah, they were the teachers, They were the law deciders when it came to certain things. Lahoros, Bena, Tameva, Tahor. They played a number of roles in the community, but when they're in the Beis HaMikdash, then they take on a second dimension. They're no longer Kohanim with personalities and Gavras who come and inspire the people and teach the people and do what they have to do. Now they're transformed. Now they become Klei Mikdash. Remember, the source for Hamishtamish B'Kuhuna Ma'al was the comparison between the Kalim in the Mikdash and the Kohanim themselves. Ma Kalim Hamishtamish B'Han Ma'al Af Hamishtamish B'Kohanim Ma'al. If you treat the Kohanim, certainly when his Big Day Kuhuna are on, in a fashion which is not appropriate, that's the same as desecrating one of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. And this, I think, helps us understand and appreciate all of the dimensions of what a Kohen is and the difference between the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash and a Kohen outside of the Beis HaMikdash. If you take a look at source number 8, when you hear the parsha of this Shabbos, you'll just pay attention to how the Kohanim are treated, and the entire parsha really conveys this transition and this back and forth between the vessels of the Mikdash and the Kohanim, especially via the Big Day Kahuna, and how the Big Day Kahuna, I believe, transformed the Kohen into these clay Mikdash. The Rambam, as I mentioned before, describes and discusses the laws of Big Day Kahuna in the section that he calls Hilchos Klei Mikdash V'Ha'ovdim Bo. Right? Because the Kohanim themselves, when they're in the Beis HaMikdash, they are, in a certain sense, vessels that serve in the same capacity as the other vessels. So, but what's the meaning behind this? Okay, I think the Lumdus is correct. There's an article that I reference in the bottom by Avram Yehuda Bachrach in one of the old Beis Yitzchaks, which I have here, which actually said that the Rav made a very similar distinction, so it's got to be right. And the idea of being able to categorize the Kohen as having two different aspects, being a kind of individual Gavra Kohen and then being Klei Mikdash, it's not just the quantitative thing. It's not that he goes from being a 75% Kohen to a full-fledged Kohen, but that there really is a change in the identity. We still need to try to explain, you know, why that is and why this is so important and what's the significance of it. So I believe in a halachic sense, we can understand the significance of this based on the question of the Gemara in the Nedarim, which appears a couple of other places in Shas as well, which is a fundamental query about who are the Kohanim working for? Ibayilahu. Source number 9. Hani kani shluchei didan havu o shluchei dishmaya. Right? Are the Kohanim serving us, the people? Or are they serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Are they God's priests or they are priests? What is their essential identity, their essential agency? Lamai nafkamina? So the Gemara in the Nedarim, of course, is interested in the Nedarim issues. What difference does it make whether they're God's servants or ours? Lemudar hana. I amr teshulchi didan hava mahani lei v'asr. I amr teshulchi dishmaya shari ma. So it happens if you say, I don't want to derive any benefit from this particular person. So if they're viewed as being our shliach, then that can cause a problem because they're my agent and I'm deriving benefit from them working on my behalf in the Beis HaMikdash. But if they're God's agents, we don't have to worry about what they do inside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. There are a number of Gemaras which discuss this, and I think the bottom line is when you take the role of the Kohen in total, and you look at them as the wearers of the tzitz and the ephod, if you view the Kohanim in a certain sense, you see that they are representatives of Bnei Yisrael. If the karbanos were brought in a non-ideal fashion, the tzitz is maratzah nevertheless, because as agents of the entire people, the Kohanim have the ability to kind of whitewash any potential problem. But of course, the Kohanim also are the conduits the other way and are agents of God on our behalf. When we recite Birchas Kohanim, you certainly see the Kohanim in that kind of capacity, where they're figuratively blessing, conveying God's blessing through their words and through their fingertips to the Jewish people. And that's the important point to remember. When it comes to service in the Beis HaMikdash, especially there, the Kohanim have to completely depersonalize. They can't bring their own religious, personal religious aspirations into play. The mushel, of course, is the bridge. If you're trying to cross a bridge and it's wobbling back and forth, you're going to stumble, you're going to fall off, etc. The Kohanim serve as that bridge. And they serve as the conduit back and forth between God and the Jewish people in terms of the avodah. And if they offer, and if they inject their own personal religious aspirations and their own ideas and their own longings into the avodah, you then have a swaying, contorting bridge. And that undermines what the avodah is all about. That relationship, that bridge, that conduit, needs to be one that is straight, that is unbending, and that is not subject to the whims and the personal ideas of the individual. They have to be clay mikdash. Otherwise, the entire enterprise of the avodah is challenging and is problematic and fraught with danger. That's why the Torah goes on and on about how if the Kohanim aren't washed, and if the Kohanim aren't prepared, and if all these things, and gives us the scariest of consequences and punishments, if the Kohanim violate this, they really have undermined what the avoda is all about. I think now we can understand one additional aspect in terms of the progression of the parshas which we have just entered. We all are familiar with the 15 or so times in parshios, specifically in Parshas Pekudei, where the Torah says Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, Kasher Tziva Hashem Biyad Moshe, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. There are 15 different times in Prakim Lamed Tes and Mem where that phrase is found to teach us that the Jews did exactly what they were commanded to do when it came to building the Mishkan. But it doesn't end there. Right? The beginning of Sefer Vayikra as kind of the manual for Karbanos, and the first 7 or 8 prakim of Vayikra kind of gives us from the Oved's perspective, from the person who's bringing the sacrifice, and from the Kohen's perspective, who's doing the actual work, Vayikra and Tzav, that kind of is its own section. Then, at the end of Tzav, we resume the narrative of the Mishkan building, the Mishkan construction, and Hakamas and Mishkan, and again you find another dozen times Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, Biyad Moshe, etc. Then there's a sharp, sharp contrast. Beginning of Parshas, Shmini, we read, or as we transition from that narrative to the description of the day in which the Mishkan was built, we read about a tremendous tragedy that transpired. Parak Yud in Vayikra Pasuk Aleph, Vayiklu b'nei Aaron, Nadav v'Aviyu ish machtavto, Vayinu b'hen eish, Vayasimu aleha ketores, Vayakrivu l'fnei Hashem eish zara, asher lo tziva osa. Takes on so much more meaning once you see the 30 times beforehand. There's a pattern, Kasher Tziva Otam, Kasher Tziva Otam. What did Nadav and Avihu do? So there's a lot of discussion what exactly they did. But according to this verse in the Torah, what they did wrong was they did something that they weren't commanded. They brought something from their own personal inspiration. And that's what undermines their what they did and why the consequences are so severe. The entire Mishkan is predicated on having a group, the Kohanim, who can work in the Mishkan, who will work as vessels, as objective conduits to allow the Avodah to reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to kind of serve as the back and forth between God and the Jewish people. That's the role of the Big Day Kahuna. The Big Day Kahuna transforms the Kohanim and takes them from being individuals, B'nai Aharon, as they're described at the beginning of the Pasuk, by Yichu B'nai Aharon, and they're supposed to be more than B'nai Aharon inside the Beis HaMikdash. They're supposed to be Kohanim who serve as vessels in the Mikdash. And by not heeding that, or not internalizing that message, Nadav and Avihu suffered such terrible consequences. So, to sum up, what we've tried to chart is a perspective on the Kohanim and what the Big Day Kahuna, the function of the Big Day Kahuna is. The Kohanim play many roles in the lives of Bnei Yisrael in the desert and later on inside Eretz Yisrael. And their role, even today, is one of which has special requirements, special prohibitions, Tumas Meis, Yisr Grusha, Kedimus, V'Kidashta. But there's another element of the Kohen, which we don't necessarily experience nowadays through the Kohen, which is this depersonalizing, this objectifying of the Kohen, transforming the Kohen into a clay mikdash. And that's what's accomplished via the Big Day Kahuna. The Big Day Kahuna transformed the Kohen when the Kohen have these vestments placed on them, especially the Kohen Gadol. He really is not allowed to have any personality. That's, you know, Aharon is the first, Vayidom Aharon, that whole story. He has to put all his personal feelings aside and the show must go on. He has to do the Avodah. But all the Kohanim, I think, share with the Kohen Gadol this mandate to serve as the conduits, the Shluchei D'Rachmana and the Shluchei D'Dan. I think if we can jump off from the Kohanim to take religious leadership in general, I think the message is very important, and that there are aspects of religious leadership which certainly prize individuality, personality, bringing your personal convictions and your character traits and your thoughts and ideas into the mix. The Nesiim are the foil here. The Nesiim offered a korban on the days of inauguration of the Mishkan. They did that from their own, on their own volition, and that was seen as okay. You know, that was approved of and celebrated. So in a certain sense, you have certainly the aspect of religious leadership, and the Kohen himself outside of the Beis HaMikdash has to employ all of his personality, all of his charisma, and all of his individual passion and knowledge and everything else to serve the Jewish people. And that's a value. But when you're inside the Mikdash, when the stakes are as high as they are inside the Beis HaMikdash and you're serving as that conduit, and there are certain scenarios nowadays where religious leaders are serve in that capacity as well, where they really are dealing with issues of critical importance, that's when you have to heed the lesson of the Big Day Kahuna and recognize that even without the Big Day Kahuna, we have to kind of depersonalize and try to serve selflessly and objectively as conduits between the Jewish people and between HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And ultimately, the lesson of Parshas Tetzaveh is that with the Big Day Kahuna and with a clear depersonalization, we're capable of having this rare relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, performing avodos, having an intimate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires a certain element of depersonalization, but at the same time, to recognize that outside of the Beis HaMikdash, they're not just B'nai Aharon, they are indeed Kohanim, and that the role outside the Beis HaMikdash requires them to utilize all their resources and all their individual character traits to make an impact on Klal Yisrael. Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hain. We'll see you on the next.